From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention?
Computer running slow?
I'm waiting.
Caught a virus? Does your computer seem to have a life of its own?
Malfunction. Need input.
The computer guru is here.
Thank God you're here!
Call in now.
Now it's Mike Swanson,
your computer guru.
Oh, let's see where you look at this. The levels are all right. Hello. Hi. Hi. How you doing today, Kent?
Every once in a while.
I am pleased with
I don't know. I kind of like the overmodulated thing because it's like...
Like I'm yelling
it's
at
It's like everyone. An extra kick to the show right at the beginning.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Welcome to the Computer Guru Show. My name is Mike, here to deal with your technology needs and treat you like a person in the process. 790-2040 if you'd like to be part of the show. We would love to have you on and talk about whatever's ailing you technology-wise. And I was inadvertently rude to Bob. I didn't mean to be. Sorry, Bob. I apologize.
See, when I'm rude, I try to do it on purpose, because it's like, I might as well get the credit for it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's not my style.
I don't know, sometimes a little snark is a good thing.
You know, it's just, my mind is in other places, that's all. Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on.
So I had an interesting experience last night.
Oh, yeah?
Technology-wise.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So I'm at the ATM after work, because it's Friday, time to go deposit my check.
Right.
And I get my check deposited, and I went to go withdraw some cash, and the machine just froze, okay? And so I'm like, all right, it's going to time out eventually.
Right.
And it did after like 10 minutes, and it rebooted. And apparently that ATM was running Windows 7, which is an interesting fact.
Huh.
But nice. The more interesting thing was that when it was all the way back booted, which took a process that took 20 minutes, by the way.
Wow.
When it was all the way back, it just decided to keep my card in it. So I don't have that anymore, I guess.
I don't know. I use the type of ATMs that don't actually take your card.
Yeah, mine takes it into the machine.
Yeah, mine doesn't do that.
So I called my bank this morning, and they informed me that I can just go down there and get it. So I was like, okay, great. What time do you close today? And they said 1 o'clock, which is coincidentally when the show ends. So
do you need to take off early?
I guess I just won't have my debit card this weekend, which is fine.
All right. All right. Did you see any available USB ports on it?
You know, I was almost considering that, and then I was like, I'm not going to be the guy who gets caught fiddling with the ATM. I'm just not going to do it, so I'll just deal with it.
All right.
I didn't get my cash either, though, which kind of sucked, because I needed that.
Yeah, I could see that would be a problem.
Yeah, and I had to tell, like, I think it was like 6 people who came up behind me that I was just going to be here, and they're just going to have to deal with that.
Right. You can move me if you like.
I was like, you know, I can move, but it's not going to work anyway. It's frozen, so.
Right.
There's no recourse for you. I'm sorry.
Well, Windows 7, huh?
Yeah, which, you know, I was a little bit... I mean, it's not good, but it's better than if I saw, like, an XP screen.
I am mildly miffed that they're using Windows 7 still. But we all knew that. Up until very recently, there were still a bunch of ATMs running Windows XP.
Yeah, or 98 even, maybe.
Yeah, and I know that the... because it crashes all the time, the sign computer for the Roadhouse Theater is absolutely Windows XP.
I noticed also when it was going through its boot sequence that this ATM had an American Megatrends board. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And they got it running Windows 7.
That's amazing.
I don't know if I feel good about that. But I know why it's not running Windows 10.
Why?
Because it's an American Megatrends board.
Well, is it a board or just the BIOS?
I don't know.
It's probably just the BIOS, I imagine.
It was old. That's all I know.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's just a BIOS, because and I bet it's an Atom.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because, like, the firewall machines that we build.
Oh, yeah, I could see that, I guess.
They're Atoms with AMI BIOS.
Okay, that makes more sense. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to have to go in and, like, you know, ATM shame, operating system shame your bank.
I know, I have a hard time, I'm going to have a hard time not mentioning that to them when I go eventually to get my debit card. Like, by the way... You know, we do IT security, and your machine is running Windows 7 out there. What's with that?
Generally, there's special sort of blends of Windows 7 and some other custom kernel that's going on.
I hope so, but at the same time, I don't have very much faith in any of this anymore. So,
yeah, I don't blame you. The ATMs are interesting animals, and so are gas pumps these days.
Yeah.
And they're similar in the fact that they're almost computers, and, well, I mean, they are, but...
Yeah, they have to have some computational power to scream an advertisement at you.
Are you talking about those little boxes?
That yeah, the, like they have TVs on them now that are just playing commercials.
Yeah, the at least the one by my house, right? It doesn't do commercials, it does weather.
That's better, at least. Every time I have a commercial playing while I'm getting gas, I can't help but feel like I'm in Minority Report, you know, when I'm walking through the mall.
Yeah.
I've never understood that kind of advertising. Never in my life have I bought something as a result of an ad that was that invasive. In fact, I've said, now I'm not going to buy that.
Right, because I'm offended by the volume of this particular commercial.
Yeah, but never in my life have I, like, been about to skip a YouTube ad, and then I was like, wait, this product is interesting. I don't think that's ever happened.
I'm trying to think if I've
is it a subconscious thing that they're going for? Like, I'm going to see a Coke commercial, and I'll be like, man, it's been a while since I had a Coke.
Yeah, I don't know. In fact, I almost feel offended at the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, if you can have it. First of all, I don't understand how Coke advertising is supposed to work. Right, because every Coke commercial, if you were to replace the Coke, would be a hallucinogenic drug.
It's true.
Right, it would just be, you know, you're imagining suddenly that there are people dancing in the car wash.
Also, I've never had an event ruined because I didn't have a particular brand of soda there. Like, I've never been, like, at the beach and I was like, man, this would have been way better with a Pepsi. Yeah. Also, there's no way for me to be any more aware that Coke exists. Like, I don't need to see an ad ever again.
Yeah, Coke's one of those things where it's sort of, everyone knows.
I feel like they're just advertising because that's what they've always done at this point. Nobody's going to not know about Coke.
I think it's a tax credit.
It must be, something like that.
Yeah, because...
Because they could not advertise for 10 straight years and I would buy the same amount of Coke that I do anyway, which is every now and then.
Yeah, on occasion.
If the gas station that I'm at doesn't have, like, an iced tea.
Which is probably sold and distributed by Coke anyway.
Almost certainly, yeah.
Yeah, Coke is one of those companies that, at least in the beverage world, that is, they're much like Disney in that regard.
Yeah, they just own everything.
Yeah, they own all the things. Yeah. Anyway, the irritation level with the way that technology is being used to advertise is high.
I mean, it's like an arms race. There's so much invested in blocking ads and then blocking ad blockers.
Right. Well, it's hard to do at the gas station.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking about making some like AR glasses that detect ads.
Do you think that maybe they'll move towards like the ATMs before you get your cash out? You have to watch a commercial.
That would not. Don't even say that because that's probably going to happen.
Yeah, you can't.
It's going to be like pay a $1 fee or watch this ad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what's sad? I would pay the fee like every time.
Right. And it's like it's a 2-minute commercial. Right?
Oh man, that would be the worst.
And people would do it.
And there's just a line behind you.
Right.
And people are like, "Just pay the dollar." And you're like, "I can't."
All right, let's talk to Charles. Hey Charles, how are you? Oh. There we go.
Yeah, I gotta forcefully disagree with you about the reality in those Coke commercials. I'm gonna tell you, when those polar bears are at my house, they absolutely want a Coke.
You know what?
What's wrong with you?
I just haven't invited the.
Are you supposed to take the hallucinogenic drugs before you watch the Coke commercial? Is that how it works?
No, the commercial is the hallucinogenic drug. You're right.
My goodness.
Hey, why are you guys watching the commercial anyway? Most of those or listening to it. Most of the stuff at the gas pump and the other places have a mute button.
Do they really?
Yeah, most of them do. You just got to look at the screen. And of all people, not to realize that, guys, most of them have a mute button that'll, even if you can't stop watching the commercial, you can at least not listen to
it. I feel like I don't want to do that because then they're going to know that I interacted with their advertisement in some way.
The mute buttons on the ones at, what's the name? I don't even know what sort of, but they get the little box that says, "Hey, points member," and then it starts screaming at you.
There, it's a little round control panel, and they've got a mute button on it.
Yeah, I just like
most of the mute buttons are broken
from people just jamming them.
Some of them are, but I noticed most of the mute buttons, they're not touched except the mute button. It's got the writing on it. It's kind of worn down from people pushing it.
Right. You know? There's been a few that I've been at where the mute button is broken because somebody, like, apparently was unhappy with.
They were just forcibly muting the ad.
They're muting harder.
Well, I carry certain things like that stick, and I find that on the ones that are broken, if I jam the stick on it pretty hard, it'll still mute.
Okay.
I was getting gas at QT recently, and apparently somebody like pulled up to one of the gas pumps and then called the QT and asked them to come out and pump their gas for them, and they did it.
Wow.
So
they have to. That's part of handicap legislation.
Oh, do you have to have like a handicap sticker for that?
Yeah, you have to offer that service because it's if you don't, it's supposedly discriminating against some people.
So the moral of the story is if you hit the little round squawk box with a baseball bat, it mutes it. So
if you just hit the gas pump with your car, it'll probably mute it too.
Yeah, especially if you have some igniting device.
Yeah.
All right.
That's an ultra hot take. All right. Thanks for the call, Charles. So if you have run over a gas station pump with your car and you need it repaired, take it to Perfection Auto Works.
Oh, that was good.
Because I think that they can probably take care of that for you. Speaking of, I am in negotiations with Mike to actually get my car down there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I'm still waiting on my – because I told him, I was like, I can't be without a car.
Yeah.
You know, because you know how much – you know how unforgiving my schedule is.
It's true.
Hopefully, we'll finish putting together the Prius.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Are you talking about the Prius here?
Yeah, and then Mike can have the BMW to make it beautiful.
And you can just be speeding around in the Prius.
That's right. I'll be a speedy Prius.
Well.
Anyway, check out their website, perfectionautoworks.com. They're good guys.
If anybody can fix that Prius, it's Perfection Auto Works.
Yeah, yeah. They're good people, though. And they have a kind of a special thing going on where if you tell them, hey, you know, Computer Guru sent me, you don't have to wait to the end of the line. You get bumped up a bit.
Front of the line service, huh?
Yeah. So you just go ahead and tell them Computer Guru sent you, and they will be very happy with that, which will make me happy, all right? Because I like happy. Everybody likes happy. Anyway, perfectionautoworks.com. Check them out. Listen to their ad coming up next, and we'll be right back.
Computer Guru Mike Swanson is here to help you tame that beast of a machine. Join the chat right now at guruShow.com or call in. This is the Computer Guru Show on KVOY, The Voice. Your technology guru, Mike Swanson, is answering all your questions one by one.
Yes, science!
So chime in with yours. The website is guruShow.com. Tune in, click in, and kick back. This is the Computer Guru Show.
Let's take a moment to talk about our favorite, process chip manufacturer. Those guys over at Intel are in trouble.
Kind of in a big way, too.
Yeah, and for a couple of different reasons. You want to talk about the CEO first or the security?
I think we should probably explain what happened and then talk about the CEO.
Okay. So we've been talking about some AMT flaws, which is the management service that's built into a lot of most of the Intel processors these days. And it allows for – it's designed for, like, large corporate IT to be able to have effectively BIOS-level control of the machine, like, as though they are sitting at it but remotely.
Right.
And just control the computer completely, right, from remote. And it's a super useful feature if you're managing large networks.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's nice to have, like, a – remote connection, but when you need to manage the BIOS.
Yeah, and allows you to make, you know, changes to the system while it's running, that type of thing. We've been saying for years, hey, this is kind of a dangerous thing to have in here because it's effectively a separate computer that's running with, you know, a separate running processor that's running within the machine. And even when the machine is quote-unquote powered off, right, that other processor is running and the network card is running, so you can manage that machine and even if you wanted to, turn the machine on from remote.
Right.
And we started talking about the security flaws in this a couple of years ago. And it turns out that it's gotten everybody else's attention right now because some serious flaws have been found, especially with the way that operating systems interact with these particular management processes. And it's not limited just to Windows. Mac machines are also affected because most of them are running Intel chips, at least for now. I imagine we're going to see a change in that pretty quickly.
Which would be kind of crazy because historically they've been one of the biggest purchasers of Intel processors.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this type of news to say, hey, there's these gigantic flaws. And we should probably tell you that this isn't one of the flaws where it's just like, hey, somebody could turn your computer on. It's that with this particular exploit, that even things like full disk encryption would mean nothing, right? The remote attacker could read your information, would be able to take information from you. They would be able to see passwords as they're typed in real time, and no antivirus would be able to detect it because it's not running in the same sphere. It's not running within that operating system context. It's running at the hardware level where it can read everything. And this really puts a lot of places in pretty significant risk.
The interesting thing here to me is that while there's already a fix for this, that patch, essentially, the way that it handles this, slows the processor down by as much as 30%.
Right. Now, they're saying that you're probably not going to see that much on average.
Yeah.
Right? But there's the potential for 30% slowing.
And I mean, when we're in a competition sphere right now between AMD and Intel where, I mean, speed advantage is measured in single-digit percentages,
right,
that's a big drop.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is. To me, you know, the performance impact isn't nearly as important as the security impact.
Right, of course.
You know, because most of the time, in most cases, generally, people are sort of overpowered on the CPU anyway. They're not hitting that CPU all that hard.
Yeah, even with the highest end gaming rig, you really don't need a 12-core i7.
Right. And so there's a lot of people that are running, as an example, like i7 processors. And they're going to be using, I bet if you were to look at an overall process usage for a machine, you're probably saying 20% usage, 30% for a 24-hour period. Even on my machine, right, where, you know, I experiment a lot with things that are even high CPU usage, I'm probably only averaging 40% usage.
I wonder how this will affect the animation and movie production industries, because any type of film production is very processor intensive, and unless they've got it running on like a separate GPU farm, which the really big companies will do.
Yeah, well, Pixar's got their own farm.
But like YouTube developer or YouTube showrunners, for instance, most of the time they're using Macs as well. And yeah, I mean, a 20 to 30% drop in your ability to render your video is kind of a big deal.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And so anyway, there's just no way to stop this, right, other than getting the software patches. And from what I understand, there's going to be some basic firmware updates for the processors.
It's also worth noting that this is legacy Intel processor stuff. Like, the stuff that's coming out brand new
right.
is not going to be affected
actually,
by this.
Actually, since last year.
Yeah.
And there is an option to turn off AMT in most processors, right? And turning that off actually does a great deal towards protecting yourself from this particular thing. But most people don't go into the BIOS.
And that's not going to be an option anyway for the really big businesses that need those AMT features.
Right. So I'm curious what's going to happen. As you would imagine, the Intel stock didn't fare all that well because of it.
Yeah, it dropped by 3% pretty much instantly, which is a huge number for them.
Yeah, but you know what the interesting thing is how the CEO reacted before the release of this announcement, or the announcement of this particular flaw, which was, he normally sells about $2 million a year worth of Intel stock. But it was $40 million this year, right before this was announced. And so,
what a coincidence.
You know, I'm sure that there's no sort of like, you know, he knew or anything.
No, that was just luck. It was already scheduled.
Just happened to need 20 times his normal amount, this year. Maybe he was buying a house. Or a yacht.
Just in case.
Right. Or it was a really rough Christmas. That's what it was. So once again, we've got some type of a, you know, a CEO type person that is in the tech industry. Now, this we talked about the one with the other crypto coin that where they were selling crypto coin off before,
right?
Which one was that? I can't remember which coin that was. It's one of the ones that you have.
Oh, it was Bitcoin Cash. Yeah.
So yeah, Bitcoin Cash. The developer of that basically saying, hey, you know, I just need some extra money right now, and taking a bunch out. But anyway, so there's an investigation happening to find out, you know, what he knew and when he knew it, that type of thing.
Yeah, because that's the most insider trading thing I've ever heard, I think. I don't know how you could think you're going to get away with that.
I don't know. But so anyway, your computer may be telling you that, hey, you need some updates, by the way. Even though this has mostly been patched in previous updates.
Is that going to be a – how is that going to get patched? Is it going to be a BIOS update? How does that work?
Right now it's an OS update.
Okay.
And but from what I understand, there are going to be firmware updates for your board.
Yeah.
Most people don't go out there and get those.
And it's kind of a scary thing to be, like, flashing your BIOS.
Yeah, because, well, in new machines, it's not so much because they generally have dual BIOS.
Right.
And but older machines, let's say older than 5 years ago.
I'll never feel comfortable 100% with that.
There is a remote chance that you will brick your machine.
Do you know how many things I have bricked because I didn't read the revision number at the end of the model number? It happens.
It does happen. You should be careful if you're going to, you know, update the BIOS, but it's also one of those things that you should probably do.
Yeah, and if you're running a newer machine, like you said, that has the dual BIOS, then you really aren't at risk, so.
Yeah, you just go ahead and do what you do, right? Get your update if you have a dual BIOS machine. And, that will help you out quite a lot.
And if you're buying a new machine and you're just a normal person, maybe look at buying a Ryzen processor. A machine with a Ryzen.
Maybe. I mean, I'm still trying to overcome my extreme prejudice of AMD.
You got to give them credit, though. The Ryzen series is it's almost a different company at this point.
Yeah.
If you think of it as not AMD but as Ryzen instead, you might be okay.
All right. I'll take a look at that. You know what? I should probably build one and just try it.
Get a Ryzen 5. Don't go with the highest-end one, not the lowest-end one. Ryzen 5 is where it's at.
So they're using a similar numbering structure to, like, the I series?
It seems like it, yeah.
Just trying to jump on that?
I guess so. It kind of worked, though.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I'll build one, and then I will give an honest feedback of it.
I think the best compliment that I could give to the Ryzen processors is that you will not notice a difference.
That would be
amazing. And they're, like, $200 cheaper.
Yeah, because the problem with AMD is that you knew that you were on an AMD machine.
Yeah. It's loud, it's hot.
Right, it frequently crashes, you know, those types of things. And it gave very different blue screens as to Intel processors. Yeah, if I could build a machine with an AMD processor that I just didn't know it was an AMD, that would be a complete success in my opinion.
Yeah, because they're not, like, incredibly faster than Intel processors right now. It's just that they're night and day better than previous AMD offerings.
Right. All right, so let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk more about the problems with the technology of this world. Not to mention, you can give us a call at 790-2040. We'll be right back.
Whether you're dealing with hardware installation or, heaven forbid, a virus, Mike Swanson is answering all your questions one by one. So call in or chat in with yours. The website, guruShow.com. Tune in, click in, and kick back. This is the Computer Guru Show on AM 1030 KVO. Mike Swanson, your computer guru, is just a click away. Listen and watch at guruShow.com. This is a Computer Guru Show on KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show, 790-2040, if you'd like to be part of the show. How did my levels change? That's what I want to know. They did. Didn't they? Or am I just being louder?
It's me. I changed them.
Oh, okay. All right. So if you'd like to call and ask a question, you can give us a call, 790-2040. And if you're the type that doesn't want to talk to us on air, you can call 304-8300 and talk to the shop. They won't put you on the air at all.
Not at all.
I promise.
Although it is Howard, so he may try to mess with you a little bit.
Well, it is, yeah. That's how Howard gets his kicks, is he tries to mess with people a little bit. But, yeah, that's what happens. All right, so what's next, sir?
How would you feel about purchasing fried chicken with Bitcoin?
Oh, you know what? I knew that the fast food companies were going to jump on this.
Why wouldn't they?
Right, because it's nothing but you make more money than you – you know, inflation on this is insane.
I have to say, though, that I wouldn't want to do a transaction for fast food with Bitcoin because it would be incredibly slow if they wanted you to stand there and verify it.
Yeah.
Bitcoin transactions are slow.
Yeah, I imagine that they're working through some type of clearinghouse for that.
Yeah, like
an escrow account.
I mean, if they would take Litecoin, then yeah, or Ripple.
Something quick.
Yeah, Ripple's crazy fast, so...
So how long does it take on average for a transaction?
Bitcoin transactions can take hours, depending on how many people are trading things at the moment.
Right.
Litecoin transactions tend to take like 10 minutes from my experience, and Ripple is like instant.
Hmm. All right, then. I've done zero Ripple or Litecoin.
Well, Bitcoin was, you know, it's the OG. It was the model that everything else is based on, but they've improved on it since then. So you got to look at some of these smaller, newer coins if you want to see the upcoming technology.
Yeah.
Wow, we got popular all of a sudden.
Yeah, I don't know what you did, but anyway. Maybe I actually said the phone number slow enough this time.
Or I said something that just offended everyone just now.
Yeah, everyone's mad at you.
I can't believe you said Bitcoin is slow.
KFC? What?
Yeah, anyway, that was the point of that, was that KFC in Canada is accepting Bitcoin now.
Yeah, and we've been working on ways to potentially do that, but it seems to confuse anyone who's an accountant altogether.
Yeah, the biggest hang up with Bitcoin right now is that none of the people who are in a position to like make this happen understand it.
Right.
Unfortunately. It's not that hard of a concept either.
Yeah, and we have this sort of weird contract going with our payment provider. And it's like I can't use another payment provider.
Would they consider Bitcoin to be a payment provider?
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I've been working with, is talking them out of that.
Do they consider trade a payment provider? Because that's like the same thing.
Yeah. No, they don't. But
bartering, yeah. We're gonna work on that, because I'd really like to see a cryptocurrency ability to pay at Computer Guru.
Me too. And as everyone should want, right? Because that would be interesting. I don't know. I'm half doing it just because of curiosity.
Yeah, and I mean, everybody always says Bitcoin's going to fail. That could be the case. Bitcoin might fail, but the underlying technology of the blockchain and all these new technologies that are using it, that's forever. It's going to be around.
Right. All right, let's take some calls here. Who are we going to start with? With Les? Let's start with line two, Les. Hello, Les. How are you?
Hi, guys. 2018 greetings.
Greetings.
You as well.
And I took your advice. Oh, it was probably last month, about upgrading, taking advantage of the Windows 10 upgrade using the disabled service method.
It would have had to have been last month.
Yeah, free, anyway.
Yeah, for free.
And I had an old, like a Windows 8.0 that I hadn't used, and I figured that would be a good way to get into the virtual box to make one with 10. So I created a virtual box with 8, and then I upgraded it to 10, no problems. Other than the video sharing, I was looking at it, and the most you can get is like 256 megabytes for your video memory. And my intent of the video or the virtual box would be to be able to put your programs on there, like Photoshop and all that. I think, Mike, you had suggested then you have like a something you can use and not have to worry about, you know, putting in your keys and all that stuff.
Right.
But if 256 megabyte is really nothing if you're going to use Photoshop, so am I missing something, or is that not really...
You're using VirtualBox, right?
Yeah, it's a limitation of VirtualBox.
Yeah, that's why.
So the VirtualBox limitation is 256, but I think that's only on the 32-bit version. Or you have the 64-bit version of VirtualBox?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's installed in 64-bit.
And the operating system is 64?
Yeah.
Okay.
Windows 10.
Just making sure. Making sure that your original, like your Windows 8 that you upgraded, was also 64.
Yes, everything was 10. In fact, I think it installed it in the
I want to say I remember from messing around with VirtualBox that if you want to access more, you have to set up a pass-through so that it's actually utilizing your GPU.
Right. There's a way to do, and I don't remember off the top of my head how to do it, but there's a way in VirtualBox to give direct access to that operating system.
Because it's simulating that GPU, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So there is a way to do a pass-through, and I can't remember how that works off the top of my head. The other flavors that cost more for virtualizing machines tend to have this built in, or they offer you better virtualization when it comes to graphics hardware. But there is a way to do a pass through in VirtualBox, and unfortunately, I don't remember what it is.
I could research it. I just researched how to get to, I think it was 24 meg, and to get it to 256. You know, there were some YouTube videos on that. That was pretty straightforward. But I do have it set up for 10, and I'm, you know, playing around with it. But before I start installing stuff, it's not going to be overly useful.
VirtualBox GPU pass-through, you'll find what you need.
Not to mention that there's an interesting thing that happens with these types of things. Even though your virtual machine may only be reporting that 256 megs of RAM, it's still passing that through to the real card and then getting a response back. And that happens really fast. So even though it says that it has less RAM there that's initially utilizable, you know, that you can use, it's still pretty quick. And it may not be the bottleneck that you think it's going to be.
I hadn't tried with any photo. Before I got further, I thought I would ask. And the other little problem with that virtual box is, let's say I have a USB printer, and it sees that port, but it doesn't share between the host machine. I couldn't really figure out how to get any, or the webcam. You know, it sees the port, but it's like my host computer.
Right,
has webcam access, but I wasn't sure how to.
At the top of the screen, there's going to be like a USB devices drop-down menu.
Right.
And you can go in there and then assign it to whatever virtual machine you want. But by default, those are on the host machine first. And so then when you go and assign it to a virtual machine, it virtually unplugs it from the host machine and plugs it into the virtual machine.
And you have to do the same thing with network connections, right?
No, network machine, they're bridged.
Okay.
So
yeah, that did it automatically. Okay. The network, I didn't have to do much with that. It was just it could see there was a webcam, but it couldn't access it.
Right, because USB devices are exclusive. So you can't have a USB device plugged into more than one machine at a time. So you have to effectively go and unplug it from the host machine and plug it into the virtual machine.
Okay, well, I will play around with that. It was also fun setting up the fresh installs of Windows 7. I don't know why. I see what you guys were talking about.
Yeah.
It was different.
And the nice thing is that you can now make backup copies of that virtual machine file or put them on a different machine and fire them up and everything's exactly the way it's supposed to be. Or you can just share them on a network, but you'll have exclusive access to one of them. So,
speaking of network, did you ever research that Zools?
No, I forgot.
File thing?
No, I forgot.
You were correct. It was IO safe as far as the fireproof, waterproof backup drive enclosures.
Right.
So, but the ones I'm seeing that I would consider reasonable priced are all USB 3s, and I'm pretty sure you have a 6-9 foot limit on the cable.
So here's how you get around
between them.
You can get $30 little boxes that will take USB and turn it into the network.
Oh.
So, and you can have them powered over the network so they can live anywhere. And you can convert, it's basically a USB to network adapter. You can get them on Amazon for as little as like $6.
Okay. Don't
get the cheap ones.
I never thought of that. Thank you.
Don't get the cheap ones. Get the most expensive one you can find, actually. On those.
So there would be USB 3.2 network.
Yes.
Okay.
And
all right.
And those, what they'll do is they basically become little SMB servers. So it becomes like a network share on the network. It's pretty cool. Check them out.
All right. I will research that because the USB 3 ones, you could get a 3 terabyte IO safe for maybe $350.
With no drives, but yes.
Yes, with actually did have a drive.
For $350, I feel like it should come with a drive.
Yeah, but the Isle of Safes are stupid expensive.
Oh, okay.
Because they're fireproof and, you know, all of that.
Yeah, but the ones with the network are started, like, they were about $650 without any drives.
That's the ones I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Well, I got to move on, Wes. Thank you for the call.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Let's move on to Bruce. Let's talk to Bruce. Hello, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. And yourself?
Not bad. What can I do for you?
Can you talk a little more about Bitcoin and then the Bitcoin mining? I hear these people that are Bitcoin mining, and I don't really understand what they're looking for.
I'm going to turn it over to Rob because this is his area.
And then hang on. The other thing is I see that Ripple is trading at almost 7, and it's at 201 as we speak.
Yeah.
Isn't that a bank-based cryptocurrency?
Yeah, Ripple's interesting because it's like a decentralized, centralized currency. I don't want to get too much into that because it's pretty technical and there's a lot involved, but I would definitely tell anybody who's already knows something about crypto to go look at Ripple if you haven't already. But yeah, as far as Bitcoin mining goes, really all it is on a fundamental level is your computer being used to solve the algorithm that is that particular block of Bitcoins. So it's just trying to decrypt that block, essentially, and you get a percentage of those coins based on how much work your computer did if you're using a pool.
Right, so for the uninitiated, there is a set number of Bitcoins that are available, and how each one of those coins comes into the world is that a number of machines are involved in the process of creating that particular block for the blockchain. So each one that gets completed is a new Bitcoin that exists in the world. And the way that the algorithm works is that each coin is more difficult exponentially than the one before. And so there's a bunch of machines that are all trying to solve a particular coin.
Yeah, because at this point, it used to be that you could mine solo just by yourself and you could get, thousands of coins a day at one point. But as it got more difficult, it's essentially now impossible to mine on your own with just your computer. So what the vast majority of people do is they join what are called pools, which are just networks of computers. It's almost like a botnet in a way. And it's tens of thousands of machines all around the world that are all working to solve that one block together. And then you're awarded a small amount based on what your machine did. For the most part, Bitcoin mining is not profitable these days. You'll spend more on the electricity that it takes, unless you have like a crazy warehouse in the jungle that has every GPU manufactured by AMD last year inside of it.
And it's solar powered.
Yeah. But these other cryptocurrencies, you can definitely still mine them. There's a lot of research that's done on it, but I highly suggest that everybody go and do that because whether you like Bitcoin or not, it's a part of things right now and it's going to be for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that. So, well, thank you so much.
No problem.
All right, bye.
Yeah, it's one of the questions that I get quite a lot is, how is this Bitcoin a thing?
What's all this Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to talk about it, though.
All right. Give us a call, 790-2040. We'll be back right after these messages.
Computer troubles? Need some advice? Call in now. Mike Swanson will be back after these messages. The Computer Guru Show, AM 1030, KVOY, The Voice. Mike Swanson, your computer guru, is just a click away. Listen and watch at guruShow.com. This is the Computer Guru Show.
Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. If you'd like to be part of the show, you can give us a call, 520-790-2040. Let's go ahead and talk to Sandy. Hello, Sandy. How are you?
Well, good morning. I've just got a new computer, and I'm putting all the new software and things on, and my new machine has Office 365, which is, I think, cloud-based, and I have this prejudice. I'm avoiding the cloud still.
Okay.
So I found out that there's a Libre Office or Office Libre, which has a suite of a calculator and, like, a word processor and PowerPoint-like.
Yeah, it's basically a clone of Office.
Now, would that if I use that too long, will my data eventually not be compatible, do you think, in the future to Microsoft?
Well, as of right now, LibreOffice has the ability to save in all of the Microsoft Office formats, and I really don't see that changing in the future because it's kind of like their big selling point is that it's compatible with Office. So as long as you're backing it up properly, it should be fine.
Okay, because is Office 365 cloud-based mean that in the future I would purchase the next version of Office without a CD? Is that what that means?
So the way that 365 works is, this is one of my complaints about Microsoft, and I'll do a short rant, and then we'll actually answer your question. Is that Microsoft needs to stop naming products that are different with the same name.
Yeah.
Right? So there's Microsoft Office 365. And within 365, there is the version that you can just purchase. There is the version that is the subscription model. It's also what they call their mail service. It's ridiculous that they name everything the same thing. But, what is commonly referred to as the cloud version of Office 365 is the subscription model, where you give them $100 a year, and they give you Office on up to 5 computers and effectively an unlimited number of mobile devices. So, and there would be no purchasing new versions. It would just automatically become the new version when the new version is released. That's how what they call the cloud version really is.
Has nothing to do with my data being in the cloud?
No, they certainly encourage you that they want you to save your data to mm-hmm. OneDrive, which is the cloud version of storage for Microsoft. But you don't have to. It doesn't require you to do so. So
in the which drive?
Microsoft's version of OwnCloud is called, or of Dropbox is called OneDrive.
I've seen that, yeah.
Right, okay. Which they have lovely, as they are, and thoughtful as they are, have forced OneDrive onto every computer in the world.
Yes, I see it all the time.
So you can save to the cloud that way, but if you don't want to, then just don't. And
okay, super.
That will take care of that.
There's really no reason for me to avoid Office 365 if I take the mail server version. Is that what you mean for the...
I'm saying is if you don't save to OneDrive, then you're not saving to the cloud, and that's fine.
Okay. All right. May I sneak in one more question since I...
You've got about 30 seconds, so yes, if
okay.
you want to.
I love Opera. I load the new Opera. It has free VPN, but I hear it's been bought by China, and I'm nervous.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't know that that's necessarily a huge security flaw unless you're dealing with, sensitive information. But if you're, if that's the one you like, that's the one you like. Just use a...
Well, which browser do you particularly like?
I use Chrome, and Rob uses Chromium. But I'm sorry I'm out of time, Sam.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. If you'd like to stick around for the second hour, we'd appreciate it. 790-2040, and we'll be right back.
People understand my intention.
Computer running slow.
I'm waiting.
Caught a virus.
Does your computer seem to have a life of its own?
Malfunction. Need input.
The Computer Guru is here.
Thank God you're here.
Call in now.
Now it's Mike Swanson,
your Computer Guru.
Hello and welcome to the Computer Guru Show. My name is Mike, here to deal with your technology needs and treat you like a person. Give us a call if you'd like to be part of the show, 790-2040, where we can deal with whatever technology issues you are having. Rob is finished with his coughing fit.
I'm dealing with issues of my own.
Yeah.
Allergies, man.
He is
I have horrible, horrible allergies.
Oh, and everybody's got, that cough right now.
I would just remove my sinuses if I could.
Right?
Probably not, actually, but it seems like it would be a good idea right now.
Right. You can just ask the dude from NXS about that.
I got
oh, wait, you can't. All right, let's go ahead. And Marv has been very, very patient and held over from the last hour. So let's go ahead and talk to Marv. Hello, Marv. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
What can I do for you, Marv?
My problem is my computer comes up very slowly.
Okay.
It's an HP, and when I turn it on, the HP comes up on the screen. I've got two screens, and it comes up on the left screen, and then it goes black, and it starts going back and forth.
So how long do you think that it takes for it to boot up, Marv?
It's 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
And then it will ask for my password.
Okay. How old's this computer?
Oh, 5 years.
Yeah, it's probably time to do some upgrades on that one or replace it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what you say is Windows 7 on that?
No, it's 10.
It's 10. You definitely need some upgrades then or to replace it. So, I mean, if you wanted to go sort of the, relatively inexpensive route, you could do a minor upgrade and a solid state upgrade on it, and that would make it faster. But at 5 years old, it may not be worth investing in that machine. You might just be looking at a new computer.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure where I can help you other than to tell you that it's probably time to replace that thing. Now, if you've got a bunch of software on there and you perhaps don't have the software or the disks to reinstall all of that, you probably want to go with a clone where you could get another machine and we can just pick up your current operating system and put it on your new computer.
Okay.
Or do the upgrade. It just sort of depends on the base machine, whether or not it's worth doing. Do you know which processor's in that?
No, not just offhand.
Okay. So if you have a nice, older i7 or something, then that machine may be worth just doing upgrades on. It would be cheaper than replacing the machine outright. But what you can do is you can call down to the shop at 304-8300 and talk to them, and they can get all the specs from your computer, and especially if you call on Monday or Tuesday, whatever you're comfortable with, and talk to Winter. She does all the machine builds. She can tell you what it'll cost to either upgrade or replace that machine.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate the call, Marv.
Sure.
You have yourself a wonderful day, and let's go ahead and talk to Richard. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Good morning. I've got an iCloud management storage question.
Sure.
Following your advice a ways back, I finally did go over to iCloud storage. Seemed to work pretty well. But what I found out is that, first of all, it seemed to lag data transfer to the 5i devices I have by a material time lag. I'm talking about months. And then was always incomplete. I deleted it all and restarted it. That seemed to bring it back to a fairly good level. But it seems that as files are added, they don't really go to the cloud. I don't see them on the other devices. I don't see them on any device. I've aligned the source files on the computer with those that are transferred over to the iCloud drive file, and they still don't seem to really work efficiently. Most of my files are data files, about 50 gigabytes, hundreds of thousands of files overall, maybe about 50 that coalesce, 50,000 that coalesce using the Fujitsu scanners that I've had for about 10 years.
Right.
But is it necessary, I guess the question is it necessary to flush out or delete that process entirely, go to zero on both sides, and then reload the drive again through the computer?
Generally, no. Normally, that would not be any type of requirement. There can be instances where everything sort of just gets clogged up and it just doesn't know how to proceed. And, of course, because it's Apple, it doesn't tell you that. It just doesn't do it. Now, the other – so are you seeing the files that are on your PC, right? Are those showing up in iCloud?
Well, that's the question. Some of them are, some of them aren't. So if I were to, for example – I have a program to take some old legacy files created with BFS Professional, right, convert them to PDF and Word files. So I've used that as an aid to try to get everything into one place so I can see from all the devices. So let's say I would send over some Word files today that are part of a cluster of files in a directory. The answer is no, they don't just go over. They may or may not. But do they dependably go over rather uniformly given a time interval? No, they don't. I'll take the laptop, the source laptop, strip it of anything that's operating, leave it on overnight with nothing else going on, but hopefully the iCloud transfer, and it still doesn't seem to help.
Interesting. I would guess that there's probably a little more going on there, but also iCloud isn't necessarily the best solution for that number of files. In smaller numbers, that probably would work pretty well, not to mention that iCloud seems to have an affinity for pictures and music files, and not necessarily anything else. So there, you may be looking at possibly a different solution for that if you want to be able to synchronize large amounts of data that of various data types to multiple machines. And let me see if I can understand how you're using this. You're using it effectively as a backup and a way to transfer data to your mobile devices.
Correct. In other words, I have a large number of files, various sources. So I don't mean unique data types, but various sources. So let's say you or I signed a 20-page contract. Well, I would want to slap that into the Fujitsu scanner, create a PDF version of it, and have it on my five iDevices. So that's an example of the way I would use that. If I got a newsletter in from John Doe Associates, I would want to slap that in there. Same process, PDF files transferred. So each file, of course, with the scanner shows up as a single PDF. It may have anywhere from 1 to 500 pages, maybe an annual report from a company.
Right.
So that's the range of stuff that it takes.
Okay, so I would probably look at something that's a little more dedicated to this particular type of usage.
Okay.
Whereas the iCloud Drive, like I said, has this affinity for pictures and music because that's the general usage for people who are using Mac computers and iOS devices. You might be wanting to look at something like Dropbox or one of the services that we provide. We provide known cloud service for that, where you can synchronize huge amounts of data and numbers of files with any number of devices.
Is, pardon the expression, Google services, are they available for it?
Yeah, Google Drive would work for that, but the problem with the iOS side is that it doesn't play real nice with the iDevices.
Ah.
So you're going to want to look at something that's a little more neutral, just because, you know, Google and Apple don't necessarily get along all the time.
So I guess that's the rub. It's I do have a lot of pictures like everybody else does, but the picture seems to be just fine. Probably 7,000 or 8,000 pictures. I guess not too many these days, but they seem to be fine.
Right, and I think it's just because it preferences those particular types of files, whereas something like Dropbox or OwnCloud like that does not care at all what type of data it is. It just knows that it is data and it moves it.
What security concerns should someone have about Dropbox?
You know, other than other types of Dropbox itself, virtually none. But when it comes to like tangential stuff, like, you know, if you get a certain type of infection that can damage the source data, then that would carry along to something like you know, either Dropbox or OwnCloud or anything like that.
Right. Okay. I figured that, but there's nothing internal to Dropbox per se, and it wouldn't work in reverse.
Dropbox has had their problems, but
nothing so major that it's noteworthy.
Right. The biggest problem that I've seen with Dropbox lately is that, and this is probably 6 months ago, where they had some sort of a glitch where everybody's data reverted back like a week, and then you had to request a special restore on their part to put your data back to the way it was. It's pretty few and far between with that. Not to mention that I would always set up something like shadow copies to go along with it locally.
Yeah, because the two-way syncing thing can totally mess you up.
All right, so if you turn on something like shadow copies, if something goes terribly wrong, you could just revert from a VSS copy, and everything would be fine.
Well, what is shadow copy?
It's a built-in feature within all Windows since Windows 7, which allows you to turn on something where it takes a snapshot of all of your files all at once and allows you to revert back to any one of those snapshots if there's a problem. So it's like a little micro backup, sort of. Providing that the data, you know, that the drive is, doesn't go bad, it allows you to have snapshots in time that you can return to.
I do rolling backups on an external drive, so I don't know if that's...
Yeah, well, the shadow copies are nice because, first of all, it's on the local drive and it's instant. I mean, as in, it takes a couple of seconds to make that snapshot. Now, it takes forever to restore it. But, you know, in order to make those snapshots, and you can schedule them if you have a professional copy of Windows, you can schedule those to happen every so often. As an example, I have shadow copies running 3 times a day on my computer. So if something goes wrong, then I can revert back to one of those 3 points every 24 hours.
You just enter shadow copy in the command line, and does it come up, or how do you evoke it?
Yeah, if you want a good place to start is to go to the disk manager, and you can right-click on the disk manager, and there is a configure shadow copies section there. And then you can set the schedule and how much disk space it's allowed to use and that type of stuff.
Gotcha. All right, appreciate the input. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Have a good day, Dick.
You bet.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more of the Computer Guru Show right here on KVOI at 790-2040.
Computer Guru Mike Swanson is here to help you tame that beast of a machine. Join the chat right now at guruShow.com or call in. This is the Computer Guru Show on KVOY, The Voice.
I'm nerdy in the extreme and whiter than sour cream.
I was in AV Club and Glee Club and even the chess team. Only question I ever thought was hard. What do I like, Kirk, or do I like Picard?
Spend every weekend at the Renaissance Fair. Got my name on my underwear.
Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. So this time of year is CES. Now, I wanted to go this year, but could not.
We need to go at some point.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years.
We're going to have to like plan like almost the whole year to go to that.
Yeah, well, if you want to get a hotel, you definitely have to plan right now.
I just want to go back to E3.
Yeah, E3 is fun, but I like CES better. It's just
I've never been to CES, though, so I don't know what I'm missing.
Yeah, you don't know what you're missing. CES, in my opinion, is better.
If we go to CES, though, you can meet the one that you hate the most.
Which one?
We can run into Linus from Linus Tech Tips.
Oh, wow.
Because he goes to that.
Oh, he doesn't want to mess with me.
Is it going to be like the Highlander?
Yeah,
you pull out a katana.
There can be only one. You look like you're going to say something. Are you going to say something, Ken? No, you're just.
He's always poised,
listening.
Just in case you blame him for something.
Right. I'm like
contemplating.
What'd you do, Ken? What'd you do? You look guilty. All right, so let's talk about CES stuff, and we're going to use the Engadget winners list for this particular.
So this is
segment.
The Consumer Electronics Show for those of you who are not familiar with CES.
Yeah, Consumer Electronics Showcase, which is mostly just a. Technology, it's an excuse to go to Vegas, and beyond that, it's all the new upcoming technology.
All the new toys you're going to see over the next, like, 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, and some of them are out now.
Yeah, occasionally there's stuff that's going to be out right now, but a lot of times the big manufacturers will have something there that's just crazy bleeding edge.
Right. Let me just go ahead and just drop a note to the CES organizers. If you could just make it, first of all, CES is monstrous.
Yeah.
Right. It takes up all of the Las Vegas Convention Center and then some. It's a gigantic walk. Like
there's essentially no way to see it all yourself.
It's a 4-day event.
Yeah.
If you want to see it. And that's if you don't really stop and look at anything. So, I mean, it's a monstrous event.
Yeah, you're going to be walking like 30 miles a day.
And, you'll get your steps in for sure. But if they could make, if they could cut the cell phone case manufacturers down to, I don't know, maybe a third of the event, that would be lovely.
I don't see how that's an electronic anyway, though.
It's, yeah, but it's also accessories for your electronics. And it, not to mention they have all kinds of stuff there that's not necessarily electronic, but it's involved in the technology somehow.
Right.
And there's a lot to see. And last year's CES was all VR, right? It was just huge amounts of virtual reality and televisions.
Yeah.
There's always a lot of televisions at CES.
You know, those two things are directly related, and there's only probably another 10 to 15 years while you still will need to have a TV at all.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. Let's fit Greg in here just so that we can get that done.
Same subject.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
Yeah, same subject as well. I'm doing good. Thanks, Mike. On the subject of virtual reality, I'm reading some exciting news about developments other than gaming. So the woman is having contractions. She's in the hospital. She's contemplating getting the epidural, which is fraught with complications. And the doctor says, well, here, put these on. Gives her the goggles. And her attention then is changed from the pain from the contractions to the waterfall and the ocean and whatever you see with those goggles. And hours went by, but it only seemed like minutes. She gave birth without the use of drugs. And I'm thinking about when Palmer Luckey, there in Southern California, you know, spending all his time with his computers and games and whatever, and the neighbors saying, well, nothing will ever come of that boy. And, of course, he sold his development in virtual reality to Zuckerberg for $2 billion. So, but they're using it to treat, like, people who have fears of driving over the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, over a body of water, put on those goggles, and they can work their way through it. They're using them for treating alcoholism, depression.
Paralysis as well.
Pardon me?
Paralysis as well. There's actually been some interesting developments in using VR as well as machines to manually stimulate the limbs, and
right.
then they see their limbs moving in VR, and they've reconnected neural pathways, and there's some people who have been able to regain function.
Amazing. And as you were saying a minute ago, so it was a $14 billion industry in the last couple of years. They're predicting $140 billion.
I think anytime somebody tells you that nothing's ever going to come of that, you should look harder into it because
right.
that seems to be the litmus test.
Yeah. All right, guys. Take care.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, and they've been using VR for like pain mitigation and stuff like that for a while now. They've been experimenting
yeah.
with it.
So I think VR's biggest future is gaming. It's AR that's going to be everywhere else.
Yeah, and I think that those two things converge at what really is, in my opinion, where this is going, which is the computer brain interface.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so instead of having goggles strapped onto your head or, you know, some type of contact lenses or basically hardware, all right, that you will be looking at some type of, you know, cyborg-like implanted hardware to handle that interface.
And every time that I am using my VR headset, because I have the full Oculus kit, I'm almost not even amazed by what I'm doing as much as that I can't help but feel like that person standing in front of a room-sized computer and knowing that one day it's going to be something that fits in the palm of your hand. You know,
smaller, right?
Right. We're really just at the cusp of VR, and I think that it's silly to discount it because this is all developments that have happened in the last like 5 years.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with the VR stuff, and you know, my complaint has always been with the VR stuff is that there's a lot of muddying of the waters between the technologies that are coming out. And just like the caller said, right, to me, VR uses in business, right, are way more important to me than the gaming side of it.
And that's the same as somebody who uses a computer all day as my job. I cannot wait until I can put on a headset and virtualize 12 monitors so that I don't have to actually have them.
Right, and have enough resolution where you can actually see it.
Right, and I'm sure as somebody who pays the electricity bill for the work that I do, you are also happy about that.
Yeah, I could be okay with that.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of headsets that have better resolution, so one of the winners of CES this year is the HTC Vive Pro.
And this is like their next-gen headset, I take it.
Yeah, this is the one that they're releasing, turns out, this year. And it adds some things that are nice, like 3D audio, which is...
The Rift already had that one covered.
Right, but for the HTC side, that's new.
Yeah.
It's more comfortable to wear, they said. It has dual front-facing cameras, which will allow you to start doing AR stuff.
Yeah, that, and they're going to do... I almost guarantee they'll be doing inside-out tracking by the end of the year, even if it's just experimental.
So for people who don't know?
So HTC uses what are called lighthouses, which are these things that you set up in your room, and they detect your headset, and then they interact with it so that it knows where you are in right. the virtual space. It's really cumbersome, though. I mean, all the setup that's involved with VR right now is the cumbersome aspect. Inside-out tracking is the idea that your headset is the one that's tracking everything in the room. So that would mean no more lighthouses at all.
So that's much more like how the Microsoft version of that is doing it. Because it's actually scanning the room that it sees.
Right.
And then building a map as far as...
Yeah, you have to like walk around your house and it scans your entire house the first time you use it.
Right. Okay. And then it also is offering dual mics and a resolution of 2880 by 1600.
That's substantially better than what you get out of the box with either of the main headsets right now.
Right, so you're looking at 615 pixels per inch, which is considerably better because you're about the 340?
Mm-hmm, something like that.
380 for the other headsets. So you're almost twice the resolution.
So right now, I mean, since most people have not even tried this stuff yet, there is still what's called a screen door effect, which means that you can see the pixels if you concentrate on it in VR. And some people are never even able to overcome that, and they just hate it because they see this stuff. As the resolution increases, that screen door effect is going to drop, and eventually it's going to be gone completely.
Right. The pixel will be so small you won't be able to...
So when we get to, like, 8K per eye, which is future for sure,
right.
8K per eye, it's indistinguishable, I feel like, at that point. You'd have to have some eagle vision to pick out pixels there. So, yeah, it's good to see that... I mean, resolution should be the number one thing that they're trying to improve right now.
Yeah, and overall, the cumbersomeness of it, like the weight and...
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you that the Oculus is not... It's not too bad. Like, it definitely feels awkward the first time you use it, but eventually you forget it's there. They also do this really interesting thing that I've noticed with the tracking to where, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but, like, you know how you can close your eyes and reach up and touch your nose and you know exactly where it is?
Right.
It changes your perspective on where your eyes are, and so you don't slam your hand into the headset.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, so when you go to pick up your hand and touch your eye, you touch the back, you know, the outside of the case, and you don't just slam your hand into it.
That would just be, that would be beautiful YouTube, just to watch people slamming their hands into.
You can definitely watch people punching walls and TVs.
Yeah.
The first night that I had mine, I punched my TV and I almost broke it. You got to pay attention to the boundaries.
Yeah, I guess you do. And so we're going to do one more before we go to another break here. And I'm kind of skipping towards the end here. Is that they always do something that they call the best of the best,
mm-hmm.
and often enough. It is not technology as most people would see it. You know, like they wouldn't think of it this way. But this year, the winner is Toyota.
Hmm.
And they are developing something called the e-Palette. And it's effectively a van, an autonomous vehicle that's the shape of a large van. It's a rectangle on wheels. And you can do whatever you want with the inside, right? You want to build a food truck? You want to, build a little RV or a mobile office or just delivery vehicles. It's one of these things that's such a blank canvas.
So the name kind of speaks to me like they're trying to, they're really telling you to do whatever you want with it. So it really is it modular or like what's the inside is just empty?
It's totally empty. You can it's just a cube or a rectangular cube.
That's actually really cool.
On wheels.
Especially with the autonomous vehicle stuff built in because, I mean, yeah, a mobile office would be great for us.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you wanted to, if you're one of these, like, we have food trucks all around
right.
town, right? Yeah, a nice high-tech food truck can go anywhere.
So you can just sit back there and make your food and it drives you to the next location?
Right, just the space savings and, you know, having the flexibility to do whatever you want with both the interior and the exterior is kind of cool.
That is pretty cool.
So we'll have to post a link to the Engadget stuff. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and answer some phone calls and do a little bit more CES before the end of the show. This is the Computer Guru Show on KVOI. Give us a call, 790-2040.
Whether you're dealing with hardware installation or, heaven forbid, a virus,
oh.
No! No!
Mike Swanson is answering all your questions one by one. So call in or chat in with yours. The website, guruShow.com. Tune in, click in, and kick back. This is the Computer Guru Show on AM 1030, KVOY The Voice.
Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. Give us a call, 790-2040, if you'd like to be part of the show. Let's talk to Tom. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Good. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Two quick questions. One is storage. I have Windows 10.
Okay.
And running the automatic updates, it gave me an error, and it says Windows needs more space. And it says it needs 1.14 gigabytes more space. And then I look at my hard drive, and it says I have 3.82 gigabytes free.
Do you have more than one partition on this?
Just what came with the system. It's, I think, a D, but it's for HP recovery.
Okay. So it's telling you you have 3 gigabytes free and...
on the C drive.
On
the
C
drive. Partition, on that partition.
Interesting. It shouldn't be doing that. Is there... I mean, do you have a bunch of stuff in the recycle bin or anything?
No, it's empty.
Interesting.
Is it just close to the limits where it needs... maybe 4 gigabytes?
No, I mean, it shouldn't be doing that at all. I mean, so how much do you have free, actually?
Well, I'm pulling up the Explorer window. So on the C drive, that partition, it says 3.82 out of 919 gigabytes. It's a terabyte drive. And then on the HP recovery, the D drive that came with the system, it's 1.35 free out of 11.1 gigabytes. So I think that's for the operating system.
Right. I think you're probably running up against something where it's so full it doesn't know how to give you an accurate count.
Okay.
Because that's really full. If you only have 3 out of 1,000 free.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, you need to clean some stuff up there.
Okay. Thanks. Second question, quick question. I'm watching ESPN a lot on the computer, and it freezes up all the time, like with buffering, and then it stalls.
I'm going to guess that just right out of the bat, that majority of that problem is that you're out of space.
Hard disk space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On streaming video?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to write it to the disk before it can show it to you.
Saving the temporary files as you stream it. That's how it works.
Wow. Because the other ones, like Pac-12 Network or Fox Sports, it doesn't do that.
They're probably using a different player.
Or even just smaller size.
Right, and smaller chunks, something along those lines. You're out of space, man. You got to fix that first before you deal with anything else.
The last point to that is it actually happens on Xbox, which is Windows, but it doesn't happen on my iPhone.
Interesting. Well, that part I can't help you with, at least not off the top of my head. But the computer storage issue, you should resolve that. Either upgrade to a much larger drive and then clone all your data over, or add another drive and move stuff to a different drive.
Got it. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Tom. So back to the CES stuff.
I'm seeing something here that I kind of want to mention because it's super cool.
What's that?
This is out of the reach of almost everybody. But it's a TV that Samsung calls the Wall. Did you see this?
I did not.
It's a 146-inch like super HD display that they're advertising as the first modular TV, in that you can split up the single panel to work as multiple displays. So, I mean, it doesn't physically break apart, but you can divide the areas of the screen. And they said in the demo that they saw here, Samsung had it configured to where there was like a smaller TV in the center, and the border was set to blend in with the wall behind it.
Huh.
So that's interesting.
But why?
I know. I don't know why you would do that, but...
It reminds me of the Back to the Future, when Marty has his...
Right.
They've divided the thing up, or in Idiocracy.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, as somebody who I have been using multiple displays on my computer for like the whole time now, it's weird to me to just sit on my couch and just watch something.
Right.
Because the majority of the time that I'm watching something, I'm working or playing a video game. So this whole like single screen concept is weird to me now.
Yeah. Yeah, and the OLED stuff now with these TVs is amazing.
Yeah, and I mean,
super thin.
If you have anything over like a 70-inch TV, I would definitely want like some picture-in-picture mode to be able to do something else.
Yeah, yeah. I personally, I don't really watch TV.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, any of my my media viewing is generally happening on my computer at home. And I have five monitors. Sorry, so I can just dedicate one. One of them's actually a TV.
Right? Are you just, like, who was it in Batman where he's watching like all the cell phone feeds at once?
No. But, you know, I try to break things up so that it gives me, I don't know, it's sort of like you when you organize your desk.
Yeah.
The same thing when I'm organizing what's on what monitor.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I mean, like when I'm working, I'll have my monitors are subdivided into the areas that I need. And even that's, there's a joke when you use multiple displays that you always need one more.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as having enough monitors.
Well, until you run out of room.
Yeah.
Right. Now, we've got a client that has 12 monitors on one computer, and then he has another computer that runs another 8 right now.
That's crazy.
Right.
That's a lot of
And they're right next to each other. Both keyboards are on the same desk. You know, there's these great number of relatively small monitors all over the place. Now, I understand what he's trying to do. He's a day trader, whatever. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's only really two things you can be using that for.
He wants graphs on all of the things. And but still, at some point, it's just like, how do you pay attention to all that?
You know, that reminds me. I just recently I set up my computer monitors at work to look at all the cryptocurrencies, and I was like, the same thing, and I called Howard in, and I was like, I'm basically Gordon Gekko now.
Basically.
Basically.
Yeah, we're basically the same person. Let's go ahead and talk to Robert. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Hey, man.
Hey.
Yeah, on the last call, I'm sure it's probably a storage issue, but I had a buffering issue, and I'm a photographer, and I upload to Dropbox.
Right.
And I had buffering issues. It was taking 25 minutes to upload to Dropbox.
So like, I checked like one picture, feed. Or are we talking like, you know, large amounts?
No, we're talking about 40.
Okay. What?
I checked my speed, and I wasn't getting the speed I was paying for. I called Cox Cable. They were very sorry.
Yeah, that happens on occasion. I mean, I'm surprised you got them to say they were sorry.
They were very sorry.
Yeah?
So,
did they offer?
They gave me 2 months of the difference between the, what I go from 5 to 15 or from 15 to 50.
What's that?
Oh, you went from 15 to 50?
On the download, did I go from 5 to 15 or 15 to 50?
You didn't go 15 to 50 for uploads, but for...
No, I'm talking about downloads.
Downloads, you probably went to 50.
Yeah, so they got me up to 50. Everything working great.
Well, that's good.
So I would advise... Well, you know how much I hate Comcast and Cox with a passion, as much as you and Rob.
So,
but I would advise people to test their speed because I live in an apartment complex and that Cox bucket truck is out there every 10 days.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. Now, when it comes to this, though, when it comes to Cox and Comcast, I find that most people are not getting the speed that they are paying for. And then additionally, most people are willing to pay way too much, right? As an example, if you have a 50 meg plan for what you're doing, that's about right, right? That's about what I'd probably tell you to do. But I see people out there with these 300 meg plans, and all they have is an iPad on their network. And the only reason they got that is because that website took a little too long to load. That is a gigantic waste of money. And beyond that, or you see people that go, well, you know, I went out and got this 500 megabit plan that costs a lot of money per month, and it turns out the only problem that they really had was they had a 9-year-old router, right? So they have a very slow computer. Maybe they're out of disk space, right? And they're blaming the network instead of the computer. So it's not as simple as the cable companies would like to have you believe, which is, just pay for more speed, you get more speed.
Well, you know, it's also a vanity thing. You got to have the highest possible speed.
You can keep up with the Joneses all you want, but I'm telling you, it's a waste of money. But
I suppose you could check that with a get off your modem and run a cat cord and see if there's any difference there.
Right. So they want to make you do a direct connection test, and that's a very valid test. Sure, go ahead and do that. Plug it in. See if your Wi-Fi is just slow.
I've always been on the cat cord, and my Wi-Fi is streaming Netflix just fine.
Yeah, if you're uploading things, you really shouldn't be doing that over Wi-Fi.
Right. And by the way, if you're doing large uploads as though you are a photographer, right? Because you say you are, right? And
And 5 megabyte photos at a time.
Right. So if you're doing that type of thing, I will tell you right now that it's much better to look at the business accounts for that, mainly because they have a higher upload throughput. So if you're going to be doing lots of uploading to Dropbox, because most of it's asynchronous. Think about it this way, is that you're getting that 50 meg down, but you're only getting 5 up.
Yeah, I've noticed that they're selling plans like that now. They're like, you get a gigabit down, but 1 meg up.
Right.
What is this?
And that's how they're dedicating that bandwidth or splitting it apart enough where they can pull that off on the network. Otherwise, they have to upgrade all their stuff, and Lord knows they're not going to do that. So the best way to get relatively decent upload speeds is to have a business account. And you don't have any data caps.
But your bill is like way more expensive.
Your bill is a little bit more expensive, yeah. But anyway, thanks for the call, Robert. I got to take a break here. So
they were cheaters. People should check.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot.
Yeah, everyone check your – do a speed test.
Because you're not getting what you pay for.
Yeah, you're not. Unless you have one of those ones that do guaranteed speeds.
Well, sir, can you do that test at 3 in the morning?
All right, we'll be right back after this.
Each day so satisfied, I'm on my way. I've seen all good people turn their heads each day so satisfied, I'm on my way.
Computer troubles? Need some advice? Call in now. Mike Swanson will be back after these messages. The Computer Guru Show, AM 1030, KBOY, The Voice. Mike Swanson, your computer guru, is just a click away. Listen and watch at guruShow.com. This is the Computer Guru Show.
Welcome back to the Computer Guru Show. We're talking about more of the interesting stuff that is apparently over at CES. Now, a lot of cities are trying to go smart cities these days, have smart infrastructure.
And smart city. It's not usually a phrase you hear.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron. But the idea of adding the infrastructure for things like municipal Wi-Fi or an IoT sort of interaction with your, as an example, emergency vehicles now have transponders that pick up on municipal Wi-Fi. Tucson has municipal Wi-Fi for its own city services.
Right.
Now, it doesn't offer the citywide Wi-Fi that you would
for
hope
the public,
for,
right? Yeah.
That would be out there like Colorado does. But a lot of that is because where are you going to put it, right? Are you going to spend a bunch of money to put up new posts and the places to hide all of this technology? Well, there is a company called WiFiber that has figured out a very interesting way to do sort of a bolt-on upgrade. And what they're suggesting is that there's streetlights everywhere, right? Well, upgrade the streetlights. And in these streetlights, inside the body of the streetlight, you have LED lights that are cost efficient and all of that. But there's also security cameras and Wi-Fi hubs.
So are you talking about replacing the entire pole or just...
Just the head.
So they can just pop the light fixture out of the pole?
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it even offers some interesting stuff, like if you can get everything integrated, you could have light color changes or strobing effects to guide emergency vehicles to wherever the emergency is.
Well, yeah, because so many streetlights are still like incandescent bulbs.
Right.
So they're huge to emit that amount of light.
And they're not efficient.
Right.
By any means.
Whereas the equivalent LED could be like a fifth the size of that or smaller, giving you, I guess, a bunch of room for other electronics if you want to throw them in there.
Yeah, so there are a lot of places, especially in the more metropolitan areas, where security cameras in the fixtures themselves is kind of nice. Now, I don't necessarily like being watched all the time.
You already are anyway, though.
If you can watch traffic, all right, or anything that's nearby a major thoroughfare.
I mean, it'd be kind of nice if you're like if you get mugged or something and the city just has video of that.
Yeah, it helps find the right dude, right? That would be nice. Not being mugged, of course, but being able to figure out who was the perpetrator.
And I imagine that would aid in the... I mean, they could just track people who are running from the police pretty easily.
Yeah. Now, you see these types of things in Europe all the time. Right? You know, CCTV is a big thing in,
right,
like, London. And people say, well, there's just eyes everywhere. And that may be true. There's actually some interesting videos of where you can see the CCTV operators noticing a crime and directing police to go deal with it or something along those lines. But at the same time, for all of the omnipotence of this particular technology, there's certainly a lot of blind spots. And people know where to go to not be seen. You know, the criminals figure that stuff out pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's like that movie Eagle Eye. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, and also Minority Report to a certain extent, minus the psychics.
By the way, that was a terrible movie, Eagle Eye, but it was entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, interesting thought concept, not a very good movie. But it's interesting in its own right.
Yeah, and I mean, these types of upgrades, while this specific one, who knows if they're actually going to use it, but upgrading infrastructure in a cost-effective way is obviously the name of the game, and I'm sure we're going to see more stuff like that in the future. It's cool to see.
Now, apparently, Lenovo is cleaning up over at CES.
Oh, they're announcing a lot of new stuff?
Well, they won two categories, one for best phone or mobile device and best PC or tablet.
That's weird to hear Lenovo making mobile devices.
Yeah, and it looks a lot like the Microsoft Surface.
Oh, yeah. I remember hearing about that.
So it looks remarkably similar to the Microsoft Surface. With a very similar stand and keyboard setup, but it's Snapdragon powered, so it's got the same type of processor that's in your phone. It allows you to put in the SIM card and have mobile data to it, and apparently it's fast enough to run Windows 10 on it.
You know, I despise Surface tablets, so I hope that this is better.
Yeah, I mean, Surface tablets aren't bad, the new ones anyway.
Yeah, I haven't used the newest one, but every time I've used one in the past, I'm just like, this is horrible. This is a horrible experience.
Think about it this way: a laptop that can go literally 20 hours per charge.
Yeah, see, like, I had a Chromebook, and that was, like, the main feature. So, I mean, Lenovo does good work, though.
And the secondary Lenovo, just before we run out of time here, the secondary Lenovo product is their Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon. Now, the X1s have been around for a little while. They've gone through a couple of revisions because of some pretty significant problems that they had. Also, the X1s are also known as the Yogas when they were in the transformable version. But this one is not. It's just a laptop. And it is very, very nice.
We made some money on those Yogas when they first came out.
Yeah, replacing those hinges on those things. But it's got, they've upgraded the cameras. They even added privacy control for the camera, as in a shutter. Like, you can close.
Yeah, you know, you can tell me that the webcam is off all you want, but I want a physical thing that I can cover it with.
Yeah, and it's got Alexa support built into it with that one. So they're teaming up with Amazon if you want that type of thing. It's got good microphones on it, of course, because the the Alexa integration. And it's got great battery life, great heat dissipation, and it's what would we consider an ultrabook.
So we're talking probably like over $1,000 range.
You're looking at just about the $1,000 range,
right,
for these particular models. Anyway, thanks for listening to today's episode of the Computer Guru Show. If you would need a new website, you need your management for your business, one of your technology needs, give us a call down at the shop at 304-8300. You can also visit us at 510 East Fort Lowell, 64 North Harrison, or, of course, always visit our website, azcomputerguru.com. Thanks to Perfection Auto Works for sponsoring. We'll see you next week.